found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show. Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, entertainment. Miss a day? Download the podcast at LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show, heard here live daily at LATalkRadio.com, Channel 2, and then later to listen on demand or download at MariaSanchezShow.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and LATalkRadio.com. Thank you so much for joining us. It is an honor and a privilege, and we do not take it lightly. Later on in the program, we have an attorney visiting with us who's going to be speaking about some issues that probably are baby boomer-ish, senior-ish, but of concern for everybody. And it's not just about estate planning documents, but also about chemical restraints that are used in nursing homes, and then what you want to do in terms of how much intervention for medical purposes. And she says the issue here is not just what happens when someone dies, but what happens when someone doesn't die, when they lose the capacity to make their own financial and or health decisions. And it's of concern to me because my folks are both battling issues. And I always say to them, do you want to have extraordinary measures used to resuscitate you or not? Because you need to outlay that, and not just in your trust and in court documents. Like, your medical staff needs to know that. It needs to be in your file. I am the one that wants, if my pinky finger is throbbing or has a pulse, I want to be connected to machines. And I've said this to my children, because they're obviously the ones that would deal with it. I don't have it in writing, so I'm not practicing what I'm preaching. But they say to me, at least we know that that's what you want. And the reason is because I believe in miracles, and I believe that there are exceptions to the rule. And if it's one in 1,000 or one in 1,000,000, that means there's one. Because I've been on the other side of things where with my first child, there was a 1 in 200% chance of something happening with placentia previa, which is when the placentia is in the way of the birth canal, and it sometimes can move up and out. And I was the one out of whatever that it might not. So we had cesarean for that reason. So if I can be the one on that side, I figure I could be the one on the other side. Now, if I believed that philosophy fully, I would be buying lottery tickets, right? Which I never do, because one person is the winner, and why not it be me the one? So I guess I need to, as long as I'm espousing that theory, I might as well follow up with every now and again. So you've inspired me. There we go. And then tomorrow we actually have a president of something called MyRegistry.com, which is the leading universal gift registry service. It has broken all the traditional boundaries by allowing anyone to register for gifts from a variety of outlets, both online and brick and mortar, onto one profile and one platform. So the president of MyRegistry.com is visiting with us tomorrow. And tomorrow's going to be our last broadcast here on LA Talk Radio. And it is a bittersweet sentiment that I make that statement, because it's been 3.5 months, I think, that we've been here on LA Talk Radio, and it's been an honor and a privilege. But we're going to kind of be branching out on our own. Probably the main reason is that we have constraints here, because LA Talk Radio has about 80 talk show hosts. And because of that, we're given a certain amount of time. And I found that sometimes the topics take and deserve more time than that with which we're allowed to be here. So we're going to endeavor to do that. And that doesn't mean that every topic deserves that much of attention, but you never know until you have the guest on as to how much information is forthcoming and how much time you're going to need. And you don't know that going into it. So it has been an honor and a privilege to have the acquaintanceship of Sam and Ronnie and Ronan specifically and particularly, because they've been such great supports for the Maria Sanchez Show. And I wish them all continued success. And as I said, it's a bittersweet passing, but it's been 3.5 months of bliss. So that's a great starter. So as always, whenever possible, we try and start a program out with good news, and today is no exception. Home prices continued to gain momentum in May, and this is according to the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index. It was up 12.2% compared to a year ago, and that's just slightly better than April's rise of 12.1%. It was the biggest year-over-year jump in prices since March of 2006, which is near the peak of the housing bubble. Prices in two cities hit record highs, Dallas and Denver, topping even the highest prices that they reached during the housing bubble. However, the national index, which measures prices in the 20 largest markets, is still about a quarter below the peak of June 2006. It's 24.4%. So we got the good news, we got great news, and then we've got some little sobering news that we're still not where we were in June 2006. But prices have increased every month since June 2012, and each month the increase has been greater than the month before. So the gain in home prices has now made this a good time to sell a home. So I was in Rotary last week, sat next to a realtor. I said, I understand that your inventory is low. That's making the prices high. And she says, actually, we have a 50% increase in inventory because the numbers locally always are ahead of the numbers nationally because those numbers are a month behind. So we're talking about May at the end of July is the example here. So that's like a two-month delay. And so I even know in my neighborhood, we've got three houses for sale on my street, and that's like unbelievably staggering. So the record low mortgage rates have risen significantly, but those rates have yet to slow down the increase in home prices. And that's also because there's been a sharp drop in foreclosures, which have been holding prices down. So all 20 markets measured in the index have higher prices than they did in April, and the markets with the biggest year-over-year changes in prices are those that were hit the hardest by the housing market collapse. Prices in San Francisco, Las Vegas, Phoenix, and Atlanta are all up more than 20% from a year ago. They're saying, however, that this has experts worried that they cannot be sustained. So there is a little sobering news, but still good news and good news. It was released yesterday that the FBI arrested 150 people across the United States on charges of holding children against their will for prostitution. Officials on Monday called it the largest ever operation against child sex trafficking. The suspects, whom the FBI referred to as pimps, were arrested in 76 cities in the United States, and they're going to be facing state and federal charges related to sex crimes and human trafficking. The FBI agents and local police recovered 105 children at truck stops, motels, casinos, and other places where they were forced to work as prostitutes. Of the 150 suspects, 18 were arrested by agents in Detroit, 17 by agents in San Francisco, and 13 by Oklahoma City agents. The suspects were not part of the same operation, which the FBI is calling Operation Cross Country. And they're saying the children who are most vulnerable to be exploited for sex crimes are between the ages of 13 and 16 without strong ties to family members. Now, 50 Shades of Grey has been in the news since it was released, and I believe it was in 2011. And what's interesting about it is this time it's not about the trilogy, and it's not about the parody that we promoted earlier this month, which is called Spank, which is actually very funny and very entertaining. I, who have never read any of the 50 Shades of Grey, say that I enjoyed it. The women who had read the books enjoyed it even more. First of all, I don't read fiction in general. I'd say 98% of my reading is nonfiction and mostly biographical or autobiographical. That's my preference. But I don't really care to read about domination and whatever. I told you I had had conversations with my mother, who was reading it earlier this year while I was visiting because my dad was in the hospital with one of his numerous procedures. My father has had both knees replaced, both hips replaced, one shoulder replaced, dental implants. He had open heart surgery last year. He's been battling successfully malignant melanoma, so he has different bouts of radiation and chemo. We call him the bionic man. I also refer to him affectionately as the warrior parent. So he is now in the middle of his rehab for his spiral femur fracture. So he's halfway through that rehab. And I said, after that, no more. That's no more. So the 50 Shades of Grey is in the news today for two reasons. In London, they have seen a rise in emergency calls from people stuck in all kinds of awkward situations, some involving handcuffs. They say that there have been 1,300 calls involving people being trapped since 2010. And they say the calls are not just awkward, they end up costing the taxpayer. The London Fire Brigade puts the cost of these 1,300 calls at $580,000. And they say, third officer Dave Brown says, I don't know whether it's the 50 Shades effect, but the number of incidents involving items like handcuffs seems to have gone up. I'm sure most people will be 50 shades of red by the time our crews arrive to free them. They're saying, if you try handcuffs, always keep the keys nearby. Oh, a little common sense. So they're also saying that it has boosted sales of sex toys, driving women to hookup sites, and fueling a craze over sexual domination. It's also in the news because Democratic Representative Jim Moran of Virginia was among congressional delegates who last week toured Camp 7, which is the top security facility that holds more than a dozen high-value, in quotes, prisoners, including five men charged with plotting the September 11 attacks on the United States in 2001. Why is that have anything to do with the book? The 50 Shades of Grey series are the favorite reading material among the captives at Guantanamo detention camp. This is a Huffington Post story quoting Democratic Representative Jim Moran of Virginia. His quote is, rather than the Koran, the book that is requested most by the detainees is 50 Shades of Grey. They've read the entire series in English, but we were willing to translate it. I guess there's not much going on. These guys are going nowhere, so what the hell? So we have a quote from Lieutenant Colonel Samuel House, who's a spokesperson for the prison camp. We don't discuss our high-value detainees except in the most generic terms. Further, we do not discuss the assertions made by members of Congress. So journalists were allowed to visit part of the detention camp. They can only tour the other prisons and the library that provides books, magazines, and DVDs to all 166 captives. So during the visit last week, Reuters saw an eclectic mix of books in numerous languages, from religious tomes to Star Trek novelizations, Agatha Christie mysteries, stress reduction workbooks, and the Greek classic The Odyssey. Also available is The Hunger Games, according to a librarian. We have the movie and the book, too. So Guantanamo librarians have said in the past that they screen reading material for sexual content, even blacking out photos of scantily clad women in the advertisements in sports magazines. But the 50 Shades of Grey is in the news because that's what Guantanamo is reading. They've read the entire series. So that was in the Huffington Post. So another good news story, you may have seen President George H.W. Bush with a full head of hair when he gave President Barack Obama a pair of socks last week at the White House, but that head of hair is gone. And why? Willfully. He shaved it to the scalp in solidarity with and for a young cancer patient. He shaved his head after members of a Secret Service detail shaved theirs, meant to show solidarity with Patrick, who is the two-year-old son of one of the detail of his who is battling leukemia. Members of the security detail have already created a website meant to raise money for Patrick's treatment. His last name is being withheld along with that of his father, John. So at 89 years of age, former President H.W. Bush shaved his head after making a donation to Patrick's leukemia treatment, Bush and his wife Barbara lost their second child, Robin, to the disease 6 decades ago at the age of 4. The Security Detail is also organizing a motorcycle benefit run next month that will ride through the Maine countryside and host a lunch and silent auction to raise money for Patrick's treatment. So then in the political arena with politicians who are doing inappropriate things sexually, San Diego Mayor Bob Filner has a city council that 7 of the 9 members have urged him to resign. And they're supposed to deal with a request today that has come from the mayor. He is asking the city to pay his legal bills in a lawsuit filed by his former communications director. That lawsuit accuses Mayor Bob Filner of asking her to work without panties, demanding kisses, and telling her he wanted to see her naked. So the chairwoman of the California Fair Political Practices Commission says an official cannot accept more than $440 a year in donated services, and campaign money can only be used to defend against alleged violation of the state's campaign finance law. An official can, however, create a legal defense fund under state law, leaving a possible avenue if the city council says no to taking care of the expenses on a local level. And as you may recall, 7 women have offered detailed accounts of his unwanted advances, including touching and slobbering kisses. Filner, who is 70 and divorced, said late last week that he's going to enter a 2-week intensive therapy on Monday, August 5th, and he is still not resigned. He's a former 10-term Congress member, and he's less than 8 months into his 4-year term as mayor. So he's still hanging tough, as if 2 weeks in intensive therapy is going to help cure decades of misbehavior. So in the Anthony Werner sexting debacle, his campaign manager resigned over the weekend. His wife met with Hillary Clinton's spokesperson last night for dinner. Rumors are being circulating that she's maybe being advised or ascertaining what the damage is of her husband's exploits to any campaign that Hillary Clinton may make to run for president. But one of the most powerful Hollywood contributors to Anthony Weiner's mayoral campaign, Haim Saban, he's behind the Power Rangers explosion, he says that I would encourage him to stay in the race. What Anthony Weiner has or hasn't done is an issue between him and his wife. He will make an excellent mayor, and New Yorkers would be out of their minds to allow his indiscretions to get in the way of making the right decision for their city. It's none of my, yours, or anyone else's business. Because of that, I would encourage him to stay in the race. Now, in general, I feel that private matters should stay private. I believe that what goes on behind closed doors, as long as it's among consenting adults and it doesn't violate animals or children, is between the consenting parties. Howsoever, I also believe that we are capable of change, and I also believe that we should be allowed redemption or forgiveness. I believe that Anthony Weiner was allowed redemption and forgiveness. However, his behavior seems to be chronic. So whether or not I forgive Anthony Weiner is really not my business. Whether his wife does or not, that's their business. But that lapse in judgment and that sort of chronic behavior, I believe, does reflect on somebody's ability to lead or to have good, prudent judge-making abilities, judgmental abilities. So that's where then I say, burn me once, shame on you. Burn me twice, shame on me. Comes into play here. So Saban gave his campaign, Weiner's campaign, $2,475 on June 21st, which is a month before the latest sexting revelations, which occurred exactly a week ago today. This is according to the New York City Campaign Finance Board. Haim Saban's wife, Cheryl, also gave the campaign $2,475 that day and another $4,950 on June 26th. But apparently, public sentiment doesn't seem to be following his logic. In the most recent poll, Wiener's lead over the second-place Democrat candidate had evaporated, and he now trails Christie Quinn by 9 points. By the way, other Hollywood figures who donated to Wiener after resigning from Congress but before the latest scandal include legendary Pictures head Thomas Toll, Ketchup Entertainment CFO Arthur Gallstein, and CAA motion picture talent head Joel Lubin. Pre-scandal Wiener donors have included Barbara Streisand in 2008 and Bob Weinstein in 2007. So don't know if you heard about the jewelry heist over the weekend on Sunday at the posh Cannes Hotel, the Carlton International, but today's news says that what they originally evaluated the loss to be, which was $53 million, has now been upgraded to $136 million, the biggest jewelry heist in years and maybe ever. And the gunman was wearing a scarf to mask his face, and he went in to where there was this private jewelry diamond display. He brandished a handgun. I love that word, brandish. And he fled through a side door. He left on foot. He took a bag containing a briefcase and a small box. Rings, earrings, and pendants were inside the bag. The holdup took about a minute. No customers were present at the time. No police were deployed at the hotel. It happened around noon, and they're saying that it could be the biggest. And the irony is it, the hotel that it was at was featured in Alfred Hitchcock's To Catch a Thief, which starred Grace Kelly as an heiress and Cary Grant as a reformed burglar chasing a jewelry thief. So the jewelry was part of a summertime display centering on the prestigious Leviv Diamond House owned by Israeli billionaire Lev Leviv. It was to run until the end of August. So there were private staff there to guard it since it was a private hotel, and they said it occurred in front of three guards. And I guess if you got a gun, then I guess maybe you get to have the rules. They're saying it could also eclipse two other massive heists. 2008, thieves stole $118 million in rings, necklaces, and luxury watches from the Harry Winston store in Paris. And then in 2003, at Belgium's Antwerp Diamond Center, burglars stole an estimated $100 million. So we have an assistant prosecutor saying that the show's Dubai-based organizer had carried out a more complete inventory of the jewelry by yesterday and came up with the $136 million figure. So another billionaire that's in the news is Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, and he is concerned that the United States shale energy supplies are cutting global demand for its oil, and he published a letter, it's an open letter, saying that they needed to diversify their revenues and that Saudi Arabia's heavy dependence on oil was a truth that has really become a source of worry for many, and that the world's biggest crude oil exporter should implement swift measures to diversify its economy. Now, he is owner of the international investment firm Kingdon Holding. It's unusually outspoken for a top Saudi businessman to wade in, but his warning reflects growing concern among many Saudis about the long-term impact of shale technology, which is allowing the United States and Canada to tap unconventional oil deposits, which they could not reach just a few years ago. Some analysts think that this push demand for Saudi oil, as well as global oil prices, it'll push it down sharply over the next decade. So what he said in his letter is our country is facing a threat with the continuation of its near-complete reliance on oil, especially as 92% of the budget for this year depends on oil. It's necessary to diversify sources of revenue, establish a clear vision for that, and start implementing it immediately. He said, adding that the country should move ahead with plans for nuclear and solar energy production to cut local consumption of oil. The shale oil threat means Saudi Arabia will not be able to raise its production capacity to 15 million barrels of oil per day. Current capacity is at 12.5%. A few years ago, the country planned to increase capacity to 15, but that plan was put on hold after the global financial crisis. So most Saudi officials have in public insisted they're not worried by the shale threat. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, has recognized that it needs to address the issue. And this upon hydraulic fracturing being in the news, and or as it's called, fracking. We've interviewed three different sources about that in California. One is an organization out of San Francisco. If you go through our archives, you can see and hear for yourself. They are very economically and ecologically prudent and conservative, so they are against it. Then we interviewed the Western States Petroleum Energy Association. They represent the six Western states, and then we interviewed State Senator Fran Pavley, who has SB4 in front of Sacramento, and her reasoning about what she would like to do with it. So if you'd like to get up to date on that, we ask you to go to our archives. So we have a new startup company that's being backed by a very interesting set of folks, and it is called Aussie Media. And its founder is Carlos Watson, who is a former MSNBC news anchor, and he's Aussie's founder and editor-in-chief. And he is looking to appeal to young baby boomers, to millennials. So he is looking to start a media that later this year that is going to range from worldly people who thrive on change. He says they're a group that won't just tolerate things that are different, but they embrace things that are different. So one of the backers, who also is on the board, is Steve Jobs' widow. And they say she's intensely private, but she has teamed up with other Silicon Valley luminaries to back an ambitious new journalism site dubbed Aussie Medium. So that's in the news. And his offices are not in New York, not in Los Angeles, not in San Francisco, but rather in Mountain View, California, which is in the Silicon Valley, on the third floor of a 1970s era building. Inside a door with an Aussie Media nameplate opens onto the first of three small rooms where a handful of people are typing away on computers that sit atop their mismatched IKEA tables with low ceilings. So does that not just describe like a boiler room? I met a gal last week who was talking to me about her time with Amgen, which is a biotech company here in Southern California that is multinational and makes all kinds of great medicine. And she says she remembers meeting the founder, who was in jeans and t-shirts, and this is like 15, 18 years ago, and they were in this small room, and she was, and they're like, oh yeah, we're going to be, blah. And she's like, yeah, right. And so now, you know, fast forward, and it's like, yes, they were in one room, and now they've got an entire campus with building upon building upon building, and that great work ethic where they've got a place as a gym, they've got childcare, they've got a cafeteria that has state-of-the-art gourmet calorie-labeled foods and everything else, and once they were in one room with jeans and t-shirts on. So it just goes to show you that America, the greatest place to start things. So in the news, again, too, is Roman Polanski. Now, why? Because after nearly 35 years of silence, the 13-year-old girl that Roman Polanski raped in 1977 is finally telling her full story. The book is entitled The Girl, A Life in the Shadow of Roman Polanski. She's now 50 years of age. She lives here in Southern California in Woodland Hills. And the cover is a close-up shot of the teenager. She is known as Samantha, and her married name is Geimer, but her maiden name was Gailey. The picture was taken on February 20th, 1977, less than 3 weeks before Roman Polanski drugged and raped her at Jack Nicholson's Mulholland Drive home during a modeling shoot where he also gave her alcohol and a Quaalude. But here's the twist about the picture. It was taken by Roman Polanski himself. He took the pictures during his first photo session with her at her home in Woodland Hills, a session in which he got her to pose topless for him in some of the shots. And this woman who is writing, has written the book, says that she wants to reclaim her life. She says every time the story was published or anybody wrote about it, it always had his picture. And so she wanted to show her picture. So the picture surfaced during her civil suit against Polanski, which she filed in 1988, and resulted in Polanski agreeing to pay her $500,000 plus interest, which they said it was difficult for her to collect. And as part of the civil suit, her attorney, who also contributes to the book, demanded that Polanski turn over all the pictures he took, even though the director turned over some photos and all rights associated with them. The attorney believed others exist, and years later, they were discovered. The attorney's name is Lawrence Silver, and what he writes in the book is what happened was this. In executing the search warrant, the police didn't recognize the importance of a receipt claim check from a Save On Drugs photograph department. Years later, I was told that Polanski gave his lawyer the receipt and that they secured the printed roll of film and negatives from the drugstore. During the civil suit, his lawyer had to turn those photos over to me. Those photographs, important both legally and historically, would likely never have been discovered if not for the civil suit. So in announcing the book, Geimer said, "I am more than a sex victim girl, and I offer my story now without rage, but with purpose, to share a tale that will reclaim my identity." The book is going to go on sale September 17th, and if you haven't seen the picture, it's really... I mean, let's talk about it. We just talked about a story about the FBI arresting pimps, and they say that those most in danger are children 13 to 16. Well, this picture is taken of a 13-year-old. She's without makeup. She's got, you know, beautiful features. She's got these luscious adolescent lips and, you know, innocence. And to think that that was taken from her by Polanski, and that you would rape a 13-year-old girl after giving her alcohol and quail. It's like, just how desperate are you? So here's something that is in the news that is about us walking into stores. It's VIP identifying technology. Its design is supposed to prevent terrorist attacks. And the UK company that has created it supplies similar software to security services to help identify terrorists and criminals. And the ID technology works by analyzing footage of people's faces as they walk through a door. You take measurements to create a numerical code known as a face template, and you check it against a database. But it's now being used in retail settings, and it's being used so that celebrities and valued customers will be identified with a face match. So if a face is matched, the program sends an alert to the staff via computer, iPad, or smartphone, providing details like dress size, favorite buys, or shopping history. The software works even when people are wearing sunglasses, hats, and scarves, and recent tests have found that facial hair, aging, or changes in weight or hair color do not affect the accuracy of the system. The technology is being tested in a dozen undisclosed top stores and hotels in the United States, the United Kingdom, and the Far East. And it's NEC is the name of the company, and they haven't responded to requests for an interview. This is according to NPR. So it hasn't addressed why the stores that are testing the software are staying quiet about it. So here's the example they gave. When a young Indian American woman walked into a funky LA jewelry boutique, store manager thought she was just like any other customer. She didn't realize the woman was actress and writer who had been on The Office, and she had both wrote and appeared in the hit. So it is what they're saying is this lack of recognition is precisely what the VIP identifying technology, which is designed to help identify terrorists, is now being tested to see if they can identify high profile folks that they should know so that they can rush to take care of them. So unbeknownst to us, we may be being profiled in retail outlets. So buyer beware. Now we'd like to contact Sherry Elson Sperber. She's an attorney, and she's going to speak to us about some issues that affect all of us, but especially the boomers and seniors.
The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation, on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning, Sherry. No, she's not there yet. We're waiting for the connection.
You have reached Elson Law Firm. We're sorry we can't take your call right
now. Let's try her one more time.
You have reached Elson Law Firm. You have reached Elson Law Firm.
Then we were going to have to put Sherry on another program so that we can visit with her later. This is the Maria Sanchez Show. We thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and we look forward to visiting with you on our final broadcast mañana.
She'll give you some.